has got a radio mic, and she will be carrying her radio mic if you want to ask a question from the panel so that everybody can hear. I'm sure she'll be back with her radio mic in a moment. Okay? You don't have to say who you are if you don't want to, but it's always helpful to people, if you're asking a question, to know who you are and where you've come from, where you are coming from. So there we are. That's questions. But equally, there may be one or two people who feel that they want to take advantage to talk for 3 or 4 minutes about any of these aspects. And again, you're invited to, if you want to talk for 3 or 4 minutes about any of these aspects, simply wave your hand, come up the steps, and you can use this mic. And what I'll be doing will be standing there, and once you've gone 4 minutes, I'm going to show you a red card. And I hope that you will call it a day at that point. Is that all right? So, who, to start us off, because I can't see the radio mic person anywhere. Ah, no, we've got one. Questions for the panel, please. Got to be one. Bones, yes.
Shall I introduce myself as well?
Yep.
Yeah, I'm basically making a documentary about Abu Hamza's best friends. I've been filming in Finsbury Park for about 2 years. And I've just been filming from a tabloid style, really, but from the opposite direction. The difference between what happens on the street and what goes out on the television. Is your friend from Guantanamo here still?
Adnan? Oh, sorry, not the friend from...
He's gone. Ah. Maybe you know. I mean, we've got one side of the story of why people go to Afghanistan. What was he doing in Afghanistan?
Tariq's situation is complicated. Basically, his lawyer is Louise Christian, and she is still doing a lot of legal stuff on, you know, his case. I think there will be a case being lodged against the United States. I don't know the full picture. Really, like I said to you, is that those people that were released, you know, from Guantanamo Bay, they had all kinds of odd stories. I mean, like one of them was actually in jail by the Taliban anyway when the Americans came, and then they took him over. So they're sort of assorted travelers. I mean, you know, in that sort of sense, is that none of them had military training or anything like this. But especially, say, the guy from Manchester, Jamal, he was a traveler. Now you might say, well, what the hell was he doing traveling to a place like that? The thing is this, that, you know, if you look at Muslim activism, we travel everywhere. I mean, like I said, that, you know, I could have very easily been picked up in the same way. I mean, I do relief work. So you might say, well, okay, you've got a legitimate reason. But there are people in Guantanamo who are relief workers, journalists, things like this or whatever. And it's unfortunately, we're having to prove our innocence, you know, all the time. And sort of like, well, what are you doing and everything like that? When someone else, whether it's Kenneth Bigley or anybody else who might go to a war zone, no one questions why they're going there. So I think that his situation, I don't know the full details of it, and I think there are legal aspects to it, but I do believe that, particularly when we're talking about activism, you know, people might say, why did Tom go to Palestine? And I don't feel there should be this double standard that if people are going to places to try and stop injustice, that there should be this standard where if you're white, you're all right. Then, you know, we should all be able to stand up and stand out against it. But like I said to you, that from what I know, I don't think there's any military aspect to that, because otherwise he'd be in front of a military tribunal and he was released.
You want to add to this from Tom's point of view, Drossel?
People did ask. One or two people have asked why Tom went out there. He was simply a very perceptive young man who cared. He went out for very many reasons. He wanted to see, and he was brave enough to take a look and also to write and to take photographs. so that he could bring the story back.
Okay. Thank you very much indeed. We have a question from Penny.
Hi, Penny from London. I just wondered, with Guantanamo and people being questioned there, there was the case brought recently which ruled that the detainments were illegal. How is that progressing for the current detainees in Guantanamo and Belmarsh?
I didn't actually catch the question, I'm sorry.
Sorry, the question is that there was the case brought recently that the detainment of people in Guantanamo was unlawful. There was the case of two detainees who took the American government to court, which means that the other detainees, if they get the opportunity, can also pursue some kind of judicial process. How can that be instigated in the current situation?
I think, that's, you know, there are important things that there was a Supreme Court judgment which actually said that the argument the Americans had first was that Guantanamo Bay is not America, so that's why they're outside of the law. I mean, the Americans do fear lawyers like nobody else. In terms of strategies and action, I think that people who sue the American government, that's one of the best things you can do, because they are petrified of lawyers. In fact, I was speaking to a friend of mine just now when we were coming up. He's a Muslim who's stopped in New York City. He's a lawyer, and when they found out he's a lawyer, they started to become all very nice and good to him. So the fact is this, that there are lawyers who are trying to represent, in fact, one who's quite well known, Clive Stafford Smith. He's trying to bring together a coalition of people to really, I think one is important aspect is that the families need to feel empowered enough to go ahead with this, because at the moment people do feel frightened that they're taking on this huge superpower, and you know, they can never win. And to be frank, is that I look at it the other way, is that, you know, the Americans fear these small voices and they lock them up. I mean, they didn't do anything to these people except to interrogate them. And you should actually look that the power's possibly actually in our hands rather than in theirs. And it really does require people who are active to stand out and not to show fear. And on that basis, then the legal thing will carry forward.
Thank you very much indeed. Gilberto and Sky, have you anything to add to this from the point of view of your involvements? Gilberto, how did you get the group together in Italy, the legal side? How did you start it?
You mean how we started? Well, we started our group in the street of Genoa, because we made a reflection that the reflection is that in this time this movement is very dispersed. I mean, there is not like it was once a big party or some big organizations who can decide what to do. So mostly the people are, when they are hit by the repression, later they are alone. They have not a big party at the back that can support them. So our idea is that we, as lawyer, we have a very different role in this era. Our commitment is a lawyer's commitment. We ask something impossible. We ask something very strange, that is the respect of the rights. And when we speak about Guantanamo, you understand how it is really revolutionary to ask the simple respect of the law. And that we do is that we just, because there are some laws, and these laws are not respected. For Guantanamo, the usual laws, the usual system of right and the balance of power that were used to know and that we thought that they were respected. Now they are not respected. So we do what we do, that's very important, as lawyers.
Thank you very much indeed. Another question.
Yes, my name is Boykin Reynolds. I'm an American. I've lived in Europe for about 30 years. But I was wondering, do you know, is there any... I read an article recently that it said the CIA put people in prisons all over the globe. I was wondering, is there any estimate as to how many people might be in how many prisons in what countries?
Did you hear that? Can I pass this to Rachel to see if she can give you a take this question on?
Yeah, in terms of numbers, we have no idea. I certainly don't. What we do know is that what seems to be happening now is that we've got this shadowy imprisonment system set up around the world, and it does seem to be coordinated so that information from, say, Bagram or Guantanamo might be used as evidence with which to detain people without trial in Belmarsh. So it seems to be that this system has been set up to perpetuate itself, to keep itself alive, to justify itself. That much we know about what's been created. We can coordinate from Belmarsh to Abu Ghraib to Bagram. I don't know if anyone else can add to that.
I think ever since the Abu Ghraib scandal, I think the Americans have learnt to take their torture techniques more underground and been like spread about around the globe as ghost prisoners. It was recorded at Abu Ghraib that there was something like about 100 detainees who weren't even registered at the prisoner and yet were at the prison and yet were tortured. If the situation, you know, if you compare Abu Ghraib and make a guesstimate of like other detention centres like Kandahar, Bagram, also places in the Middle East like Egypt, for example, where the laws on torture and like, you know, human rights abuses are much more loosely defined than as we have in the West. But it's very hard to calculate now how many ghost prisoners and how many ghost torture bases are around the world at the moment. So I think with good journalism we might be able to find out. So.
Okay, thank you very much indeed. Warren, does that help answer your question? A little bit. Nobody knows. A lot is hidden. Gentleman over there.
Yes, thank you. My name is Eberhard Schulz. I'm a lawyer from Germany, and I have been a defense lawyer in so-called terrorist cases last century, one of them together with Gareth Pierce, who unfortunately is not here at the moment. Maybe you remember the Kan Yilmaz case. He was in Belmarsh prison for 4.5 years in extradition to Germany. I think I'm going to speak this afternoon in the seminar on political prisoners worldwide, and one of my issues is Guantanamo and the other is the famous or unfamous case of the Miami Five in the States, who had been sentenced to life life sentence, two of them, and three for 18 years because of just so-called spionage against the U.S. administration, and they are held in complete isolation in Miami. And this case started in 1999, so it has nothing to do with the so-called war on terror, which is misused as a justification for the for Guantanamo and Bagram and Abu Ghraib and all the other things. I think it's very important to discuss about the human rights issues, the question whether it's systematic or not systematic torture and all, which is discussed in Germany. But we must see that this is a very, very narrow success. Excuse my bad English, but I hope I'm understandable. To give you just one example, we have one detainee of Guantanamo in Germany, a Turkish citizen who is there for 2.5 years also, and he has a German lawyer who never saw him, never could get in contact to him until now. He has raised the case in the Supreme Court together with the others this year, and 2 weeks ago the German senator of Bremen, he is a citizen of Bremen, said, oh, he has lost his status, his legal status in Germany, because he did not call to what do we say in English, to continue it. And the journalist asked him, but he couldn't, as you know. Yes, but that's our law. So he has lost his status in Germany. So that shows how narrow the possibilities for us are. And I think we must not forget about the legal aspects, the political context, which is, for me, as Noam Chomsky said, for instance, the war on terror started 20 years ago when the U.S. administration called for the war on terror against the terrorists. At that time, it were the Latin America, the Kurds, the PKK, and so on. And now it's a new enemy, which is the so-called Islamistic terrorists. And we have many important cases on this, and we must see that this is the new enemy, because they have lost the communists as the main enemy to defend this, our so-called good Western civilized democracy. Thank you.
We have somebody right at the back. Thank you very much indeed. And by the way, if somebody would like to come up here, we've got only another 7 or 8 or 9 minutes, but if somebody actually wanted to come up here and have 3 or 4 minutes, just arrive. And we wish you good luck with this afternoon's seminar. Next question.
My name is Saif Aboukishek. I'm working with the International Solidarity Movement from Palestine. I'm also Palestinian. I think human rights is a very important topic to be addressed, especially with the torture and prisoners. I'm just kind of disappointed for not also finding a place there which putting the light on the Israeli torture against the Palestinian prisoners, as we have more than 7,000 Palestinian political prisoners. Most of them are facing administrative detention, where they don't go for court or anything. They just been arrested and facing a security file that their lawyer cannot see, and then they stay in the jail for how long ever. Recently there was an open strike where 5,000 prisoners participated, open hunger strike, and the Israeli defense minister said, well, the Palestinian prisoners can strike until death and we will do whatever we want. So I think also this can be an important point to add to the continuous torture against prisoners all over the places, which also go physically to torture, and people are more than welcome to go into the prisoners' files in Palestine and read about the several ways of torture. That I'm very positive about the news that came out from Abu Ghraib, where Israeli Secret Service and specialists in torture were there just practicing and educating the Americans about what they learned to do with Palestinians in Palestine. Thanks.
Thank you for your contribution. I'm going to ask one question myself, and that is, what can campaigning journalists do about it? We've got one or two of them here. Eva, what can we do about it? What can you do?
Well, I'd just like to second what Saif was saying, that everything that we've heard today has been happening since 1948.
for Palestinians, and really the incubator of terrorist strategies against a population, and humiliation, torture, all of these things, is Israel, is the territory that Israel has occupied. There are ghost prisoners, Palestinians in secret detention centers being tortured in Palestine. As Saif said, evidence, secret evidence, which we are now seeing, and which was used as well, actually, against Irish prisoners of war, also to Palestinians in this country, Samar and Jawad, who have been sent down for over 20 years on the basis of undisclosed evidence. This is what happens. This is what a state is capable of. This is what states do to people. This is what happens when the political temperature is raised, as it is, you know, on fire in Palestine, because people are struggling for their very existence there. So you will see incredible strategies and policies of torture and state repression and apartheid and, you know, a slow genocide, really, as we're seeing in Palestine. And the translation of that into the context of Iraq and Afghanistan, you know, you can see the similar strategies played out, similar tactics, and we'll see it in this country too, as our government becomes threatened by increasingly louder voices, active people who can recognize the war crimes that our government is perpetrating, and its deafening silence on Palestine and its total illegitimacy anyway, as all governments in my mind are. So what campaigning journalists can do is basically report the truth and you know, write, you know, do writing that agitates and inspires and really supports and it tries to you know, enforce human rights and justice, and to speak out what Palestinians are saying, because this is the thing: Palestinian people have been denied a voice, they have been collectively suppressed, collectively abandoned, and, you know, I don't think it's within anybody's interests to repeat the propaganda of Israel and repeat statements from Israeli occupation forces, Israeli ministers. We need to be speaking out and actually helping Palestinians speak out for themselves, coming to this country, traveling around the world, you know, counteracting the brutalizing propaganda that is shrouding really a genocide.
Thank you very much. Did somebody want? Let's just take, while we...
Go ahead. Rachel.
Rachel, so sorry. After you, Rachel.
Okay. I agree with Eva as far as Belmarsh is concerned. It is breaking the misinformation. We've got ourselves into a situation where people are prepared to abandon the human rights of a few because they are so terrified, which is very much like the national psychosis that operates in Israel. Their culture of fear. And what we seem to be saying here is, well, never mind their freedoms. What about our safety? And so we really need to campaign to break that connection, that there is no connection between the two, that locking people up in detention without trial, without any prospect of release, doesn't make us safer. If anything, it makes us less safe, because now the world can look at us and hate us and ridicule the sham of our democracy. So we really need to disconnect that association. And I think that campaigning on this issue does have an effect. The government now is under a lot of scrutiny for the Belmarsh detentions. The House of Lords heard an appeal last week. A lot of campaigners say that this kind of scrutiny is really putting pressure on the government, and all we can do is work to keep that pressure up.
Thank you very much indeed. Now, we do have a time problem here. I'm going to ask Skye, whose seminar this is, if in a maximum of 1 minute he can say his final statement.
Okay. Yeah, thank you, Grant. Thank you, Gwen. I think my, you know, ultimate aim with this seminar and, well, with the invited panelists was to send a very strong message to the Americans, you know, Mr. Blair, and also the Italian government, that human rights abuses and torture does not work, doesn't get you anywhere, it just destroys what you would describe yourself as a human being, you know, as an American or an Italian or a British person, if you do this, your soul gets destroyed if you go and torture another human being, okay? There's something very basically wrong going on here. And, you know, when I see George Bush on the TV, you know, extolling the virtues of, like, evangelical, you know, Christian stuff, and, like, saying democracy and freedom, all this stuff, he's just, like, chucking it all away in the bin. When he keeps camps like Camp X-Ray and Abu Ghraib going, my final thought will be for all campaigning and investigative journalists is to keep banging away at showing up these human rights abuses and to tell America that they can't get away with it.
Thank you, Sky. Something we can all agree with. We've had house room here today. We've got house room in a very important 3 or 4 day communication rights event. We have many people from Indymedia working here and a whole program. And before again we finally go to our final speaker, I'm going to ask Dave, who's an Indymedia activist, to come and talk to us. Dave.
Hi. I think it was said earlier by Rachel when she was talking about the importance of independent and alternative media in these areas. And Sky just repeated that it is essential for people to keep banging on doors, to keep trying to investigate and to find the truth. And that's one thing certainly that many activists in indie media are trying to do, and many of the people who are working in this building. I wanted to just say something very briefly about the seizure of the Indymedia web servers that happened a week ago now, where 2 web servers were seized from a website host in London by, it appears, an international legal law enforcement cooperation operation. So the American authorities, at the request, it seems, of the Italian and Swiss authorities, performed an operation in London to seize the 2 web servers on which 20 different indie media websites were held. I know it's in no way a parallel in terms of human experience, but there are parallels with things like Camp X-Ray in what has happened to the indie media servers. They were taken, and we don't know by who. We don't know why they were taken. We don't know where they were taken to. We don't know the reason for it. We haven't known who to complain to. It's like they've dropped into a black hole and disappeared. Well, they came back a couple of days ago, but we still don't know who gave them back, and we still don't know why they were taken or what happened to them. We're entering a very dangerous phase in global history where international law enforcement are cooperating to obscure due process. They're cooperating with various different legal instruments, both in Europe and globally, which is resulting in a situation where if, like Indymedia, an operation like this is executed against you, you don't know who to ask. You don't know who to follow up. It's very similar to what people, Rachel was describing, in trying to find out information about people that are being held captive. Only in this case, it's the electronic, the cyber version of the reality. And in seizing those web servers, the authorities took off the internet 20 different media outlets, effectively silencing the people who are operating through those. Now, I know this subject is going to be talked about in several sessions, both inside the ESF and here. It'll be a subject of discussion this evening, I know, where Pilger's speaking and other people are speaking. The session after lunch here will be discussing a little bit more about what's happened to the indie media servers, and also specifically on Saturday morning from 9 till 10:30 we'll be holding indie media and alternative media meeting to discuss action strategies in the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Dave. And we're very, very grateful to you and everybody who's looked after us. I'll get my quick thank yous out of the way straight away. Obviously, the people, the stewards, the people who've looked after us and organized everything, the people who've worked hard on the films, and especially, I'm going to say thank you to your speakers on your behalf today, those who've suffered, those who are fighting for them, those who are campaigning. So, your speakers. We've heard some great things today, and is another world possible? I guess it is, but I think everybody's got to play their part. Now, our final speaker was due to be a very leading lawyer, Gareth Pearce, who's been in the forefront and a lot in the news lately. She was unable to be here and gave a small film, but in practice it's not a film that will readily screen. So we won't be hearing from her. And out of interest, you'll be interested to know that about half an hour ago I was told, lucky you haven't got her, she's in prison. Well, I can tell you that it was corrected later to say she is visiting a client in prison. So that is Gareth. But anyway, I'm going to ask a close friend of a lot of us, Dave Madrick Cousins, if he'll come and send us on our way. Come on, Dave.
I don't even have to begin to say thank you for coming, because just by being here is thanks enough to everybody that's brave enough to go out and report the truth of what's going on in the world. I mean, they deserve our wholehearted support. And when people come back with tales of unjust imprisonment, torture, in Afghanistan or in Iraq, it's happening all over the world. In American prisons are now the largest reservations for indigenous people in North America. People are suffering through lack of medicines. I know it's awful. Well, we could watch the fireworks going on the other world, but I think they're merely a distraction. I was spent my time in the army. Torture and intimidation is a very, very good expedient. It can put your enemy off attacking you. We know that. They teach us this stuff. Interrogations are always brutal. And it's not just the Americans, it's not just the British, it's everybody. Everybody who would choose to exercise power over one person or another for their own gains, for their own means. We have to attack the root causes of what causes torture and unlawful detention to people. We have at our disposal a creative social forum where we are looking at visions of another world, ways that would create another world. People have come here just to have the talk on unlawful imprisonment and torture and detention, but we are developing the ways of communicating it worldwide. We are experimenting with broadcasting, radio, web streaming, getting videos up, finding how groups can locate with each other, turning out interactive music CDs to reach the young people and touch the hearts. This here, what you see, this is what you're all part of, is just the tip of a very, very sharp and ever-looming sword of justice. And from meetings such as this, we must build on it and look forward to a much brighter future, when we don't have to worry about unjust wars spreading out in the name of profit and gain and national sovereignty. Thank you.